This is After the Credits, the home of correct movie opinions since 2007.
Yeah.
Welcome, everyone, to episode 341 of After the Credits. I am one of your hosts, Maureen Antunes, joined today by fellow co-hosts.
Steve Stebbing.
Bill Harris.
And Melissa McDowell.
Yay.
Welcome back. The crew is back together.
The least consistent member of the podcast. Apologies.
I tried to get out of this episode, but Marina wouldn't let me.
Yeah, I said no. It wasn't a valid excuse. Conclaves are not valid excuses.
Yeah, yes. No. I figure you already had your talk with Ralph Fiennes and it did not go well.
No, totally. Yeah. Yeah. He caught me trying to break into the door seal and he's just like, get out. I'm doing that.
And you don't want to fight him because he's ripped now.
Oh,
right?
Totally.
No kidding, eh?
Yeah, he's in like some shape. So you're like, okay, Ralph. And then you run.
That movie is getting like massive play on Amazon Prime. It's been in like 10 for 3 days.
It's like you do wonder if the filmmakers are like pumped that there's a bump in the viewership of their films due to tragic events. Like, was Soderbergh like pumped to like, oh, Contagion's getting a lot of views during the pandemic?
He thought it was weird.
Yeah, it's scary. I obviously watched it when that film came out in 2010, but I watched it like when the 4K came out and I was like, ugh.
Yes, so accurate.
Yeah, it really
too close
was.
To home, man.
I think a buddy of mine watched that movie during COVID and he was like texting me. He's like, we're a half hour into the film. They're killing Kate Winslet. I'm like, yeah.
Yeah.
He's like, she's like the main character. I'm like,
yeah. There is no main character.
It's just a movie. They're like, they don't do that in Hollywood movies. And I'm like, it's a Steven Soderbergh movie. They're killing Kate Winslet.
Yeah, I can't believe that anybody wanted to watch that during the pandemic. I wanted escapism. Like, I just.
Yeah.
I rewatched it.
Did you?
Yeah, I did.
The pandemic is the reason why Tiger King captivated people.
Yeah,
okay. Exactly. It was just like, exactly like. We need to get off this planet for a couple for a mini series at least.
Tiger King. It was like massive rewatches of Community, Schitt's Creek, and just things that were like light and happy and not about reality.
I think I might have watched Veronica Mars twice because I just love Veronica Mars. But I've still never seen Tiger King. Fuck that shit.
Have you, because of your love for Veronica Mars, have you watched High Potential?
I have not.
You know that that's the complete Veronica Mars team, like Dan Etheridge,
yes, I know.
Rob Thomas.
I just have not watched it. I don't know why. Yeah.
Is it good?
Well, it's got Caitlin Olsen, so I'm inclined to say yes, I like it.
Yeah, she's awesome.
I really, really love Sweet D.
Yeah.
So
okay, I'm gonna add this to my watch list.
And the Mick is so great too. If you haven't seen the Mick before, for like it was unjustifiably canceled. It is such a great show. Caitlin Olsen, all of her swings connect for me comedy wise. I generally really like her.
High potential. All right.
Yeah,
adding to my list.
She's like essentially she is like a single mom cleaner that was like cleaning up the office of like a homicide department, and like she also has a high IQ, so she like moved all the stuff around and helped them solve the case like unwittingly, and so they get her, it's like The Mentalist. Then they're like, okay, well now you have to help us solve crimes. It's like Castle and The Mentalist, all those type of things.
Nice.
Okay,
but. And it's also so it's really witty because I just like Rob Thomas and Dan Etheridge and stuff and that team as writers. So
doing
it so far.
Yeah. Nice.
Excellent. Something light.
I got two things before we start. First thing off, I went and saw Red Rooms on Canada Film Day. What'd you guys do?
Fuck you.
I watched nothing. I watched a bunch of Dark Side of the Ring.
That's cool.
That's okay. Wait. When was Canada? I should know this. When was Canadian Film Day?
Was it the 16th?
Last
Wednesday? Two Wednesdays ago? Something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was watching The Handmaid's Tale. Does that count as Canadian content?
Margaret Atwood.
So I think that is filmed in Toronto. So yeah, I think that is a yes. Cool. I'm winning at life.
I'll take that. Red Rooms, still incredible.
Of course it is. It's amazing.
I'm pretty sure 90% of the crowd had not seen it and were generally disturbed by it. And I was so happy.
That's always good.
Yeah.
That's appropriate reaction. If anyone walked out of there and was not disturbed, I would worry about that person.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Fully agreed. Yeah.
Good stuff. And my second thing, I was listening to a podcast earlier and they had this really funny topic. Did you know that the Oscars is adding something next year where you have to be able to prove that you watch the movies to be able to vote on them?
Hey, nice.
Yeah.
So you can't just vote for your friends anymore?
Yeah. That's very good.
Like, yeah, you have to watch all of the films that were nominated in order to vote in the category.
Like, how incredible is that? Finally.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I like that for sure.
How do you prove that you watched them?
The Academy portal, they'll be able to tell if you've watched the entire film.
Yeah. Okay, so only if you've watched them through the portal.
Plus, supposedly, if you go to a screening at whatever, like the Dolby Theater, you have to sign a form saying you've watched it.
So most of the Academy voters do watch their content through the portal. Okay. The screeners are mostly for press and critics groups. I mean, I think that the voters get them as well, but generally they have access to the Academy portal, which has everything in one place.
Okay, but so like if you've seen something, say at a film festival.
No idea how that works. I'm sure I'm sure there's machinations on figuring that out, but
I still think it's cool.
I think it's the right move.
Yeah,
I think so too.
Let me vote.
Yeah. Get me in there.
Yeah, I've seen
get me in there. Get me in there.
And they added a new category.
Fuckers. Stunts.
Yeah.
No, casting.
Best casting.
Best casting?
Yeah.
Oh.
Wow. I think stunts is not that far off. I think it's only a matter of time before that gets added.
So, no, stunt has been added.
Has it?
Yeah. So you're telling me Anora could have won another Oscar last year?
Yeah.
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 So. Could it have, though?
So could, The Substance could have won that casting Oscar.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. It's true. I actually have a movie on my list this week with a cast member from Anora.
Wow.
Yeah.
And it's not Mikey Madison?
It's not Mikey Madison, no.
Okay.
Interesting.
I'm curious now. I don't know what this is.
It's not that interesting when I finally get it. Okay. That's what's called a terrible tease.
Oh, Steve.
Yeah.
Oh. Okay, well, let's jump in so that we are not teased for too much longer.
Yeah, let's get sweaty. Let's get super sweaty with this.
And bluesy. Sinners is the movie of the week, which I did manage to see, Melissa. So go figure. I did manage to squeeze it in. Thoughts?
Oh, my God. This is one of those generational movies, I really feel. Like, this is like... Because apparently Ryan Coogler was influenced by From Dusk Till Dawn and The Faculty.
And The Fast and the Furious.
Yeah. So this was that like blockbuster style movie, but still has something to say. Like there's still a loud voice in this against everything that he wanted to make as a film fanboy. And Michael B. Jordan is two times great in this film.
The only thing better than Michael B. Jordan is two Michael B. Jordans.
Yeah. He's so like, honestly, everyone's really, really, really great. Like I love the position of Haley Steinfeld's character a lot. I always butcher her name. Wunmi Muzaku. Who plays Annie in this? She is fucking gorgeous. She is so beautiful. I'm always knocked out by her every time I see her in a movie or a TV show like Lovecraft County or something. Jack O'Connell doing his best thing, just being Jack O'Connell, because he is such a mix of charisma, charm, and like sinister nature that I really, really love him. Delroy Lindo is a goddamn legend.
Yep.
the scene, Omar Miller's acting in the scene where Cornbread comes back and and asking for permission in and stuff is genius stuff. Genius stuff. And then like new discoveries. Lee Jun Lee as Grace is fantastic. Jamie Lawson as Pearline, she's really, really fantastic. And Miles Caton, what an incredible first, like leading performance, honestly leading performance from a newcomer. And just those music scenes are incredible. I know I'm rambling on so much right here, but I also, before I finish up, want to talk about Ryan Coogler's chances he takes with filmmaking. Mostly the piece about black music and having all the generations walking through the crowd and everything.
That was genius.
So genius. Such a bold, a bold choice to make that could really have backfired and really could have not resonated with the audience, but it worked so, so well. And Sinners is one of the best movies of the year.
Oh, I was waiting for it. That's awesome. I love it. We need more of that, Steve.
Yeah,
I agree. I went to see this. I went to see this at the cinemas at Brentwood, which I'd never been to. And it's a pretty new theater. And they had they turned up the volume to 12. Mm. Like the wall was shaking. And it was nice. Glorious. It was just glorious. That scene floored me. I'm like, okay, this is not just your typical vampire movie. And it wasn't from the beginning, because at that point you're already like halfway into the story and you're not even anywhere near vampires. There's so much to unpack. I kind of wish I had more time to think about it. But what I like the most about this is that it's a kind of a new take on a trope that we're familiar with, which is the vampire story, right? So, I mean, it does track with what you expect. Garlic has to be invited to come in. Like, there's a lot of familiarity here, but I love this concept that they're not purely evil. And that post-credit scene is like, that's how you use a post-credit scene.
Yeah.
You use it to inform your story and cement an idea that you may have planted earlier on. It's not like let's leave this open for a sequel. It's actually like a tack on to the story. Like, if you stay long enough, you get to see what the outcome of that is. And that scene is so powerful and just makes the rest of the movie resonate even more. Like, this concept that they're not essential, they're not actually bad. They're a little bit evil, clearly, because I mean they're going around essentially killing people, but this concept of memory being passed on and the fact that they can coexist and they're offering these people a way to live in the way that they want to live for as long as they want. I don't know. There's just something interesting there for me. And this whole tie-in to music and mythology, I just found it really, really fascinating. And like one of the few times in the last like 20 years where I've seen a vampire movie that I'm like, okay, this is actually offering me something that's interesting and different and new, which we don't see very often. And then of course you said it in Jim Crow South, which adds like a total other layer to everything. It's just ingenious. It's so, so good. And it's the mark of a really great filmmaker.
And it's like a gaslighting Jim Crow South, where they're like, oh no, the Klan isn't even here anymore.
Yeah,
like,
exactly. Yeah.
Like, where they're fuck? Not. I also wanted to tack on that it brings even more sexiness and allure to the vampire stuff, and the fact that they drool too. I thought that was a really
neat that was cool.
I like how sexy this movie. I love how sexy this movie is in unlike ways that you don't fully expect. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't expect to see a guy going down on a woman like 35 minutes into a movie. You don't expect this, you know, dropping saliva into somebody's mouth. Like, it is like sexy in this like kind of like really gritty, dirty way. I really loved.
But no, but is it because it's a Ryan Coogler film that you don't expect it, or is it
no? Just... I think you don't expect. I don't expect it from a blockbuster. Period. Like, it's not something that I expect to see from, you know, a big studio movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's weird. I didn't really expect this to be a big studio movie. Like, other than the fact that Ryan Coogler made it and Warner put it out, I thought he was going to try something here, and I think he did. Mm-hmm. My only problem with the film is that I kind of wanted the indigenous posse film I wanted them to go and kick some vampire ass because those guys look badass.
Yeah.
Those guys were awesome. What I said earlier about the Fast and the Furious, I thought it was really funny that the whole movie was like about like family. Like, they, like, and they say it multiple times. And I'm the guy in the theater just chuckling because I fucking hate Vin Diesel. And he says that so many times in those movies. Yeah, it's a good movie. I just don't think it's great. I think the beginning is a little too long. I think it takes a little too long to get going at times. Once it gets going, once Jack O'Connell shows up, Jack O'Connell's really good in this movie. He's so bloody great. And I just, Michael B. Jordan's really great too, and everybody else is great. And I think it's really great. And it's just, I think the last part is stronger than the first part. And is that because it's genre? Sure. I did really enjoy the whole, as you guys were talking about, the like the hive mind aspect of it. I thought that was really cool how they share the memories. I actually didn't see the end credit. My DCP crashed, so I actually didn't know there was an end credit.
There's two.
Yeah.
You have to stay like right to the end credit.
It's the
So it kind of
the movie kind of ended, and then it just kind of crashed, and then the lights went up, and everybody's like, "Oh, it's not a Marvel film." I'm sure that. Oh shit! I guess there was. Damn it! All right, cool. So yeah, that sucks. But yeah, it's a good movie. I really liked it. I'm not quite as high as on you guys are, but I would definitely say in this year of incredibly shitty films, this is actually one of the best films of the year.
I think it might
stick. That's my thing.
I'm stealing Steve's thunder. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Stop stealing that king of Canadian film.
Meh.
I'm a little bit with you, Bill. Like, I did enjoy this, but I did. So the thing that I thought was the most interesting about this was the sort of Killmonger factor around the vampires. That kind of, as you said, not fully evil. There's some kind of like anti-colonialism, anti-slavery, anti-oppression bent to the vampire offer, that, and that's what I thought was the most interesting thing. And I wish that he had leaned into that further than he did.
Yeah.
Because I think it was the strongest part of the film. It was the most interesting part of the film. And it's what could have created much more conflict. Instead of it just being a siege movie, it would have been way more interesting. People making that choice to join them or not based on that kind of anti-oppression lens. Yeah. Yeah, I just, that's where I really wish he had leaned harder into the movie. And I thought, like, kind of the sort of second siege element with the clan kind of fell flat for me. Like, it just didn't feel like there were stakes anymore. It was like, everyone's gone already. Like, what is this even
about?
What's
the point? Yeah. You know? I actually didn't know why that was even necessary. Like, it didn't seem like there was no foreshadowing that it was going to happen. Like he said, they put out that line, but you never actually expect anything of it.
It would have almost been better if the clan had shown up while they were in the middle of the vampires. Right.
And then they got smoked by the vampires.
Exactly. Or like a combination of the people inside and the vampires, you know, like, I don't know. I think there was some like disjointedness in some choices that were made in the film, and it could have been stronger. But I also loved like where he took vampire lore. Like, I loved the anti-oppression bent, like that sort of changing the offer that it's not just about immortality, that it's actually also about transcending this oppression, like this oppressive Jim Crow South that you live in. That could have been so interesting if that choice had been made more clear. And then I also really loved this notion about music and storytelling, and storytelling through music being the thing that attracts spirits, and that's why the vampires are attracted to this group of people. That's why they're after Sammy. The hive mind element, but the fact that all of that is through music, and that it's because of Sammy's music that makes him such an attractive component to them. I thought that was really, really interesting. And the finding common ground between these like black sharecroppers and Irish immigrants and Chinese immigrants and like all of those things being kind of woven together, I thought was just was also really interesting, and the kind of stories that we need to be telling right now.
Yeah. All the all the oppressed, the undesirables, quote unquote.
Well, yeah. And the connection between Jack O'Connell's background and you know, and now who he's trying to bring into the fold is so very, very interesting.
Yeah. The whole like raising the whatever spirits through music is kind of like a weird, like cool, like switch on the Robert Johnson tale.
Yeah.
Yeah, which yeah. I thought was pretty cool.
That's why I felt a lot with Sammy's character.
Yeah.
Is that he was very Robert Johnson coded.
Yeah, he was like this generational talent kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Robert Johnson supposedly sold his soul to the devil to become a great player.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a, like a switch on it, which is pretty cool. Very cool aspect of the film.
Also, hell yeah, Lola Kirk. I'm always enjoy seeing Lola Kirk pop up in a film. And her father is a singer, right? So
nice.
That's it musically.
What about Buddy Guy? Like, that's got to be like one of the greatest cameos in a fitting, right?
A fantastic cameo, like, for sure.
Yeah, that yeah. Like I was blown away as soon as it went to that post credit scene.
So I'm gonna go see a movie on Tuesday in a theater that's playing Sinners, so I can see these stupid end scenes.
Yeah, just pop into the theater for the ending.
Exactly. I think it's worth noting that Ludwig Göransson is actually an executive producer on the movie as well as the composer.
Yeah, he's pretty good.
He's okay. Just, you know, passing talent.
Yeah.
And I think it's worth mentioning our cinematographer too, Autumn, who is really, really great. And her work here is pretty spectacular.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So do we have any thoughts on this being an Oscar player?
I think it depends on the rest of the year.
Yeah, I think so too. Like seeing this and seeing, okay, I might as well drop it now. Seeing this and seeing Warfare within the like that time span, they're very different films, but
are you traumatized for life?
A little bit. I think Warfare immediately pushed itself into my Oscar talk.
I felt like that after I watched Civil War and look what happened to me.
Yeah, that's
but
true.
We can talk Warfare in a minute because I managed to see it as well. But yeah, I want to come back to this mention of Oscars, because one of the other things that I thought is that I think is really interesting is you have a filmmaker who is making movies that he wants to make within the studio system in a time when we're saying movies are basically dead. I don't know how I feel about all of this, because I think theatrical is dead. Like, for all intents and purposes, people are not going to the movies. Like, Bill saw this on opening night with 15 people. Admittedly, I saw it really early in the day, but there were like 7 people in the theater. It still made money, and movies are still making money, but nobody knows what's going to make money anymore. And the studios, all they want to do is make money. It's not really, I'm sure in part it's about the art, but it's really about the bottom line. And I mean, look what happened when this opened the same day that they announced the new Star Wars movie. And everybody's like, Star Wars what?
Yeah, but it's this movie's more about Ryan Coogler being smart.
Yeah.
You know, getting his own deal. And then it actually starts making money and he looks like a genius. Yeah. Like, that's awesome. But
because it's also had two good weekends.
Yeah, but it's also going to piss the establishment off, right? Like,
this everybody's is also about catering to an audience that's never been catered to.
This is exactly what I'm getting at.
For years, production companies said there were no Black audiences. There were no audiences for Black films. And he's shown again and again and again that is bullshit.
Yeah.
There were a lot of articles that came out after opening weekend that, you know, were putting an asterisk beside their opening weekend because it's a Black directed film. It's a Black film. It's a film intended for Black audiences. Mm-hmm. So we're definitely not past any of that.
No. And this is what I was, you know, trying to get to is this idea that, you know, for years we've we've started to make some progress in having films from minority groups being represented at like award shows and in, you know, the big conversation about entertainment. And I mean, this is a movie for audiences. Yes, mm-hmm. maybe Black audiences, but for everybody. You know, it's not just Black people going to see it. It's people going to see it. And then I saw a trailer for Him, which is the new Jordan Peele produced a horror movie that's coming out in September about football. Like, when was the last time I saw a horror movie about sports? I don't think ever, to be honest. The Fan doesn't count. Like, but it just, it, like, to me, it just continues to show that when you give people with vision that don't look like you an opportunity to tell their own stories, things get interesting. Like, interesting shit gets made. Not everybody's going to see everything, but that's just the way the cookie crumbles. We're never going to have another, like, indie revolt like we had in the 90s. Like, that's never going to happen. There's not going to be another Sundance Generation. That's gone out the window. Like, they need to, you know, give voice to people that have stories to tell. I'm done now. I'm going to get off the soapbox.
Yeah, but like the biggest budget movie of the year is F1, and it was paid for by Apple.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like that. That's the
biggest budget. What's the budget on that one?
Oh, it's $350 million.
Holy shit ton of money.
Fuck. And that's okay. Just all the. That's just all to being able to do that shit at the venue, though, right?
Yeah.
A lot of it is going to be tech. A lot of it is going to be the cars. Which
the cars alone are like stupidly expensive.
Exactly. Yeah.
But I will say this: Asterix, Lewis Hamilton is going to walk away with a shit ton of money and good.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I didn't notice his name in the credits until the trailer I just saw recently.
Oh, no. Like, and we knew.
Oh, shit.
As soon as they were making that F1 movie, it's like, oh, yeah, this is Lewis all the way.
That's cool.
Well, yeah, he made that happen.
He knows how to make his investments and shit like that. He's a smart dude.
I'm going to throw up watching that movie if they do cockpit views, man.
It looks crazy.
Have you not seen the new trailer? There is a lot of this, a lot of shaking. I cannot wait.
Great.
It's going to be pretty crazy. I think maybe if we're talking Oscar at all for Sinners, Ludwig, maybe
costumes.
That's a costumes, that's a really good one too.
And music.
Music, production design. I mean,
Delroy's so good.
Yeah, Delroy was really
good. Anyone smell that?
That was such a great line.
It's so great.
The scene where he drinks the beer, so good.
Yeah. A friend of mine on his review, does everyone have to be so sweaty? I'm like, dude, it's the Delta South. Like, yes.
Yeah, exactly. I honestly do wish there were subtitles. I look forward to watching this with subtitles or captions turned on, because I could have used it for some of the scenes, to be totally honest. Accents were very, very south.
All I know is there's already a 4K Blu-ray set for it, and I think I've already got my name on it. So
yeah, I think it has mine on it too. I think it's safe to say that even those that didn't love it as much as Steve and I did would recommend it.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
It's a good time. It is a good time.
Especially in theaters.
Yeah, I just wish it leaned in a little bit more into the vampire offer.
All right, let's talk some other movies. And Steve, let's start with Warfare, dude, since you and I both watched it since the last show.
We did.
Melissa, we haven't talked.
I talked about it for like 10 straight minutes last episode.
Yeah. Exactly. This movie left me fucking floored.
Yeah.
I was prepared because I love Alex Garland, but holy shit.
That
opening scene might be my favorite opening scene so far.
The Eric Prydz scene.
It is so good.
Yeah.
It is so good. And it is so against everything else that comes after it.
Mm-hmm.
It's
such a good shorthand for character development.
Yes.
Because he didn't want to get caught up in the background. But in that tiny little scene, you kind of get a sense of who each of these people are.
Great.
I thought that was really brilliant, too.
And like, I would have no idea that Joseph Quinn would be like basically screaming for most of the whole movie in agony. And Cosmo Jarvis, the amount of shit that he goes through in this film. And that is who Ray Mendoza made this film for is for Cosmo Jarvis's character, which I find so poignant for the simple fact that Elliot, I forget what his last name is, but he couldn't remember what had happened to him. And I watched this movie leaning forward with my hand, my elbows on my knees type thing, like in like a shell shock, because once shit kicks off, it is so embedded. Like, yeah. I've never been so embedded in a firefight before, in the life and death consequences, and not knowing what's coming for. Like, the grenade being popped through the little hole is just like, the fuck, you know, they're running around on the roofs, they're running around the ground, like, it's crazy. And yeah. Even the resolution at the end of the film with the matriarch of the family being just fucking pissed that her house is destroyed for these fucking American soldiers. And it's just a fascinating film from top to bottom.
So yeah, well, last episode when I said that I didn't think there needed to be another war film after this film because it feels kind of definitive. What do you guys think about that?
Yeah,
I've never felt a film describe the scramble of these life and death situations so well,
and just how shitty it is.
Yeah,
yeah,
it's awful. And
people get hurt.
Yeah,
yeah, like it's,
a mangled leg will get caught on the side of a wall, and you can't pull the body any further without going out directly into the line of fire.
Yeah,
to do it. It's incredible shit. And not only that, to enact this movie, you have the hottest A-list actors possible. Like, all of these guys have massive careers, all the way down to fucking Kit Connor is going to have a big career. Like, all these people are going to have really great careers. And it's going to be that movie. The Warfare is going to be that movie that you look at 10, 15 years later, and it's going to be like, holy shit, look at this cast.
Yep.
I was blown away. And fuck yeah, Charles Melton. I fucking love him. And he's got such screen presence. And his character's name is Top in it. Yeah. I think it's great. It's great.
Yeah, I think that that ending when they're evacuated out on the tanks and everybody comes out of the houses and it's like another day. Mm-hmm. That to me was like, I cried. Like, this is so sad. Like, this is the reality that we live in. Like, they're just people.
And there's like 10 of them, and they took on the Americans in their tanks, and they're like,
yeah,
perfect weapons. And yeah.
And it's just, yeah. But like that juxtaposition of like just war, and like, we don't even know why they were there. Like, there's never an explanation.
No.
They're just, this is what they were ordered to do because they think that there's insurgents nearby. Like, it just seems so pointless. Mm-hmm. Like, all of this suffering and all of this death and all of this destruction for what?
Well, and I think that's the thing that for me is missing from this film is context. Because remember why they were in Iraq. They were in Iraq because of made up stories about weapons of mass destruction.
Yep.
And to me, that makes this whole film that much more, it makes me more angry about these situations that we put real human beings into. Mm-hmm. And so to me, like when I caught a bit of an interview, I tried not to watch too much before I went into the film, but I did catch a little bit of an interview with Alex Garland talking about how in his mind, this is an anti-war movie because it shows how brutal this is. Mm-hmm. And he wasn't trying to glamorize it in any way or make it kind of romantic for people. And I see that and I agree with it. But I also think that ultimately, if you're really making an anti-war statement, you cannot ignore the context. Like, it's not, there's a real political context to why these conflicts happen and why troops are deployed to places. And it's often economic, and we get sold a bunch of bullshit propaganda for why they're there. And so if you're just ignoring all of that and you're just going to show the horror, I don't know that it's that effective as an anti-war film.
And I think that you are right. I think that in the context of things, this could have used that context, just like Civil War could have used more context. Mm-hmm. But listening to other conversations with him since watching the film, they also set themselves rules as to what they were making and how are they going to, they were going to do this. And one of those was that they weren't going to make anything up. Like everything is memory based, based on the people that were there, that they talked to, that were involved, and what they remember. Mm-hmm. So he was saying there's a fascinating, like 42 minute interview in GQ. It's a video. I'll link to it in the show notes. Really worth watching. And it's, it's basically, he's talking about all of the movies that he's been involved in, but he talks specifically for like a good 15 minutes about the making of, not, he wasn't talking specifically about, you know, the politics of it. He was talking like more specifically about the production side of things. And he was talking about how they set this up like a Dogma movie. Like there were rules that they had to follow. And if things didn't make sense, that's just the way they were. Like you had to make it work because that's what the guys remembered. So they only use,
this movie is more about technique and technical aspects. And
I think
it is an anti-war movie.
I agree. Yeah, no, I fully agree. I think you're right. But I think the message kind of gets lost there.
I think, and also from the end of the title card to the credits, that is the exact duration of this entire operation. Mm-hmm. Like that is it only, like there's nothing bookending it. There's no any extra exposition, but it's still at the same time, it also feels like this group deployment is just meant to be a rock in a pond to create a ripple and to see what happens. Like, you know, the bureaucracy behind that is never really something discussed. They're just following orders.
I just to finish off on this. So I've known Bill long enough to know I've had this discussion with him about how Alex Garland has a really bad track record with ends of movies, third act problems. I think it started with Sunshine. I think we started having this discussion. So in this GQ interview, he talks about being a writer and how that's really helped him over the years as a filmmaker, because people will read the scripts and they think they know what they're seeing and they green light something. And then he's like, and then I get to set and I'm trying to tell the story and what I've written down doesn't work for the screen. And that's usually problematic because I don't always notice it. We shoot the thing and then in edit, we're like, how do you fix this? This doesn't work. So this, I'm like, holy shit. He just answered all my questions about all the problems I've ever had with an Alex Garland ending.
Yeah, there's definitely no third act problems in this film.
No. But I thought it was fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I gave it a 5 out of 5. Because
I can't remember
the best movie of the year.
Trademark.
Not one of. You didn't say one of.
Yeah, next right, episode.
I think right now it actually is sitting at my best of the year right now.
Okay. Well, what else do you have?
It is great. Also, we did not talk about DeFaro, but he
so good. He's so good, and he's a rising star, and I can't wait for more and more and more.
He's just him. Everything in his face. Like, there were so many scenes where he had no dialogue, but the look on his face just translated so much. I really love him as an actor. I loved him so much in Reservation Dogs.
Me too.
Beans. And then this, and he's so great. Definitely is on the rise.
Yeah, for sure.
Superb cast.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
definitely. Well, all right. So I'll start here with, this is actually a funny one because, the listeners don't know, but I have never had my driver's license.
Until now,
I've done a late life cross off of the life event and gotten my driver's license.
Steve actually just turned 16 and
I kind of feel like it because I'm like, I just want to drive. You know what I mean? Like, I'm like, let's just go anywhere. I don't need to even have a destination. Let's just go. But I ended up seeing a shitload of movies. And then one of the, landmark mystery movie nights popped up and I was like, oh shit, I can finally check one of these out now. So I got the ticket, you know, and it was after work on this past Monday, and I get to the movie theater and I'm waiting for the movie to start, and a Mongrel thing comes up on the screen, and I went, oh shit. And then it says a Daniel Minahan film. I'm like, oh shit, I just watched this movie on the weekend via a screener I got for Mongrel for a film called On Swift Horses, starring Daisy Edgar Jones, Jacob Elordi, and Warfare's Will Poulter is in this movie as well. And I mean, it's a good film. Daniel Minahan is like largely a TV guy, but he's like HBO's like go to guy. Like he did episodes of like Game of Thrones, Six Feet Under, True Blood, just a shitload of shows. And I mean, it's a serviceable film. My impression of Jacob Elordi seems to be improving film by film because he is very good in this film. And
Daisy he's very good Jones. Looking in this movie.
Yeah.
Melissa and I saw this too. We saw this on Thursday.
I think they are trying in the promotional shit for this are trying to bury that it's in a queer film. Because it looks like a lot of the marketing is pushing this film to look like a little bit of a love story between Edgar Jones and Elordi's characters, while Muriel and Julius definitely do not have a sexual relationship. I will definitely say that. But it was just kind of middle of the road for me in the end. So, but like I said, Elordi gets better to me when I see him in more stuff, because I did not like him in Priscilla whatsoever. So,
I don't have an issue with the marketing necessarily, because I do think that the relationship between Muriel and Julius is actually the central relationship in the film, even if it never gets physically sexual. But I thought this movie was beautiful. Like, it's really beautiful, and it's really beautifully queer. Like, there's just a lot of incredible images. Some of the love scenes are filmed just absolutely gorgeously. Like,
it opens on one too. You're like,
yeah, it's just kind of a really sensual film. Mm-hmm. In a lot of scenes. I did find it, like, for me, it was like a little bit slow, and I had a hard time connecting a little bit. I think because ultimately Muriel and Julius are so selfish. Like, mm-hmm. both of them are so selfish, and they, like, the way that they hurt people around them was really kind of a turnoff for me watching the film. But image wise, like, visually, mm-hmm. I think the film is stunning. Aesthetically, it's quite stunning.
Yeah,
I could go with that. I think it's a really nice looking movie. I did not care for it at all. Melissa's being far more kind to it than you guys are being far more kind to it than I would be. I think it's kind of vacant. I agree, it's beautiful and the sex scenes are really nice, and it's like, it's handled, the material is handled really well, but it's just so fucking forgettable. The title is terrible. I can never remember. Like, Melissa's told me the name of it like four times. I've written it down twice. Like, I just, if somebody asked me what that movie is named, I have no idea. I couldn't tell you. It's
Seabiscuit.
It's so forgettable. Like that connection, like, that makes no sense to me. I don't know. I just found it vapid, to be completely honest. Just,
it's a really shitty version of love. I think that's right. Like, she's in love with a guy that she was in a room with for 45 minutes, literally. Like, it's just the kind of love that's portrayed, like, both with Julius and his partner and, like, her and Julius, it's like, it's this obsessive love. Like, it's more about loving the idea of someone than actually loving them as a person that they know fully.
I could go with that.
I think that was where I had issues with it too. Like, 'cause as a romance, to me, it fails. 'Cause I think it kind of fails.
I don't think this is romantic in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
It's pretty.
I was also like, where do I oh shit. And then, like, Babylon came flashing back to me. I was like, that's where I know that guy from, Diego Calva.
Yeah. And I think it's good. I liked him.
Yeah.
Me too.
And I will say,
I also love Sasha Calle. I thought she was
I thought she was really good too.
It's funny that she kind of gets buried as being in the Flash, because I've seen her in a few like indie films that she's really great in.
Yeah.
So,
and I will say,
I thought she did the best. Like, I thought her storyline was the most interesting in terms of like that kind of underground queer culture of the, when was it, the '60s, I guess.
Yeah. It's post Korean War, right? Cause they were in the Korean War. Yeah. But I find all of the hidden underground gay bars and stuff, that whole aspect I find very interesting, especially when they get it right, when it's like not just used as an obvious like manipulation. And so that's something actually I really appreciate about this film as well, as I felt like they were getting that shit right.
Yeah, I thought like the end sequence with the wall, with all the like notes and letters of people trying to find past lovers. I found that really moving, and I wondered if some of that was real archival material.
Yeah, it's kind of like now the modern one's like post secret type thing.
So you watched this movie twice?
No, I didn't. I stood up. I went by myself, and there was other people in the audience. So I felt kind of cool that like there was enough people, like, you know, like 10, 12 people that were willing to come out to see a movie that they had no idea what movie it was. So I was like, hey, way to go, Penticton. But I stood up and audibly went, I've seen this movie.
I walked away.
Yeah. And went away, got my money back and left.
I will
how
say,
weird would that be for how do you this is a brand new movie, you've seen this movie, you fucking idiot, what are you talking about?
I will say I really appreciated the introduction of Jake Elordi in this movie.
Laying on the car,
like, okay, sure, that's not so bad, I'm okay with this,
throw me a smoke.
Yeah. It is like very raspy.
It's so
the hair. It's the hair, man. It's the
and
hair.
He's so angular. He is so angular.
It's all angles.
All angles. I saw a picture of him online, so I could get a picture for the podcast, for the visual part of the podcast that me and Chloe do. And there was a picture of him on the red carpet with a beard, and I'm like, that's so mystifying.
I know.
Why does he have a beard?
You don't see his pointy little chin, hey?
That's what I was thinking. I was like, no, you're taking away your trademark. Like, what's going on, buddy?
Also, I did love the horse scene in this movie.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't see the point of it, but sure.
And that's why I liked it.
And he just gets on a horse and rides off into the sunset. Yeah. Literally.
Yeah, absolutely.
On swift horses, baby.
Because the horse is still there. Just chilling.
Yeah. And he's swift.
It's like, whatever. And he's swift. He's riding away on the metaphor, on the title metaphor. Yeah. He rides away.
Come on, Steve. Talk about a movie I've seen.
Okay. I watched, this is just a quick bit. I watched my 4K, my Arrow 4K of 12 Monkeys.
Nice.
Which is one of my favorite films ever. It was the first more like adult film that I went to in theaters by myself as a kid, like, when it was a new release. So I have such a deep love for this one. And it's, I totally forgot that Christopher Maloney is in this one playing a Philadelphia detective, which is just great.
I know how much you love when people do this. I'm going to say it. La Jete.
Yeah. See, there we go. There we go again. I got a documentary from an American distributor. I don't think this is going to get a Canadian release, but it's a documentary called I Know Catherine, the Log Lady. And it's a documentary about Catherine Coulson, who played the Log Lady on Twin Peaks. And the sentiment is there. And it's a great tribute in thought. It's just about a really special performer outside of her being the Log Lady. It's just so massively and poorly executed. And it gets to a frustrating degree. The editing and the way they're telling her life story, as well as her filming her scenes of Twin Peaks of the Return, which kind of like she died like pretty much very soon after. It just feels like it creates like a really haphazard timeline where I just feel disjointed to the point that I don't really care. It's very bittersweet to see David Lynch talk about her, especially with Lynch just passing away so recently. Because of how much they respected each other and how much they connected. I mean, Catherine Coulson was Jack Nance's wife. So the three of them were so close ever since Eraserhead. So they're like lifelong friends at this point. And so that was really neat to see. I just really wish that the film around it was much better. I think it was through Elevation, I got to see a film that played VIFF last year that I didn't get to see due to scheduling, Bonjour Tristesse.
Oh man, that film's trash.
I didn't hate it as much as you did, clearly, because I didn't love it. At first I was like, oh, am I finally going to get to see Kleiss as a good guy? And I was just he's a piece of shit. He's a piece of shit. And you're going to really dislike Chloe Sevigny because of it. And I don't know. I just find Chloe so mesmerizing all the time. I really, really like Chloe Sevigny. Always have. And I enjoyed the lead, who I'd never seen before. Lily McHenry. I really like Kleiss a lot, but he just never plays a good dude. Just really bugs me in that sense. I was kind of middle of that one. Like how I felt about On Swift Horses, that's kind of what I felt about Bonjour Tristesse. So 2 days before I was waiting for this, I was like, why aren't you answering my email, Netflix? Or Touchwood at Netflix, because I was really wanting a screener for Havoc, which is Gareth Evans' new film with Tom Hardy. Gareth Evans, of course, is the guy that did the Raid movies, Gangs of London and The Apostle. And this is action film with Tom Hardy. And yes, the story is massively cliche. All the dialogue is like been there, done that. But holy shit, does this movie keep you rocking and rolling with all of the action sequences? Nobody does it better than Gareth Evans. I think that the man is like he holds his own within this craft. And Havoc, this movie fucking rocks, even with as cliched as it is. I loved every second of it.
I didn't love it. I love the Raid movies. They're on another level, and I really appreciate the work that Gareth Evans does. Like, he makes, like, if you're gonna make action movies, this is a way to make them. Like, he is in the same book for me as the John Wick team. Same level. Like, it's like reinventing action. Like, this is how you do it. But usually I can get behind the fact that like the story isn't there, but it just bothered me to no end. I don't know why, but at every train I'm like, oh, this is so bad. There just was not enough. There wasn't enough action sequences for all the filler talk. Like, there is just so much just filler garbage. It's not the beginning to end nonstop action that I was hoping for. Okay. I mean, it's fine. And the action sequences are spectacular, and the camera work is like, it's always so good. Like, I still don't know. You can watch the how to make this shit, and it's still like you don't fully understand how they managed to get some of those shots because they look continuous, even though clearly there are cuts in some of them. But I don't know. I didn't have the same kinetic energy that the Raid movies had for me. But I still liked it. I thought it was fine.
And of course, Timothy Oliphant comes in to the film and just adds so much more to it.
Can I reiterate the fact that his version of Agent 47 is fucking awesome? And
Nobody
understood that movie when it came out.
I saw that movie in theaters, and when he drops into that hotel room and the kids are playing Hitman, I fucking laughed. I was like, ha-ha, so
good. That movie was ahead of its time.
It was so funny.
Fully on that from the beginning. So sorry.
No worries. Another movie, and this is the Enora connection, is I saw the video game adaptation of Until Dawn.
Oh, okay.
And Odessa Ozeon is in it, who's in Anora. But I've never played the game before. Like, I don't have any knowledge of the game. I've never really played it before. All I know is what I saw in the trailers for this movie. It's fun. I had fun with this movie. It's just like these characters getting killed over and over again. And there's some kills in the second act of the, like, that's like kind of like becomes a later plot point that I thought was just kind of glorious. It's maybe it's the fact that I saw this movie, the very first screening in Penticton on the Thursday night in a theater by myself. So wow. I was talking with the screen. I was just having fun. I was like, oh shit, I recognize her. What's she in? Oh yeah, she's in Anora. Like, that's just like random. Like, I was able to like bring my phone out and be an asshole because it was just me, right? And it's the perfect movie to kind of be a dickhead. It has a couple of cheap jump scares to it. Look wise, it has some cool, some fun kills and some fun sequences. Peter Stormare chews some scenery for a couple scenes. And I enjoy when David Sandberg goes back to doing horror, because I think where he's most effective. And I'm just glad he's not doing the Shazam shit anymore.
Okay, that's the movie I'm going to watch on Tuesday so I can see the Sinners credit cookies.
And I don't mind it. I really honestly didn't mind it. And then a movie that might be one of the surprise films that I just had such a great time with for 2025 is The Accountant 2.
I was going to say, please tell me it's The Accountant 2, because I kind of want to see this thing.
This movie's great. I really had so much damn fun with this movie. I love Affleck in it. I think he's just so great. Even the opening scene is so fantastic. His opening scene is really, really great. And his chemistry with John Bernthal is just so fantastic. I love John Bernthal's character and some great action sequences. And I don't know, the collaborations from Ben Affleck and Gavin O'Connor have largely won me every time, much against what I thought that they would do for me. So yeah, I'm really surprised, but I'm probably going to give that one as foreshadowing on my Letterboxd, probably about a 4 out of 5. I enjoyed it a lot.
I was waiting for something stupid to happen, and nothing really stupid happened. So I actually kind of like this film too, actually. I was quite shocked. Yeah, that's two shows in a row of like the film I didn't think I was gonna like at all.
Yeah, there we go. I'm glad you're in the same boat on that one. Yeah. I was like, came out of it, I was like surprised. I was like, wow, that was actually really great.
Yeah, it's not bad.
The bar sequence, the country bar sequence is really great and like uplifting and like makes you feel good. Like, and it's really cheesy at its heart, but it's still great.
Bernthal's like weird taxi driver in front of the mirror moment was kind of good. I was like, what the hell are you doing, sir?
Especially when you realize what he's talking himself up for.
Yeah, it's fucking nuts.
It's really good. It's really good. Yeah.
Yeah, good stuff. I was quite shocked.
So then what else have you seen? Or is that it?
That's it. That ends it. Yeah.
Did you see The Amateur?
I did. Oh, did I not talk about The Amateur?
No, but Bill talked about it last time and that was his surprise. Right. So now I'm curious. Okay.
Yeah, I did. I think the low bar really helped me out. But also at the same time is Rami Malek's usual stuff that kind of bugs me really actually kind of work for this film.
Yeah.
I find that you're never set in stone on anybody's intentions except for Rami Malek the whole film, which makes the stuff between him and Lawrence Fishburne really, really great. And the fact that, yes, he's killing people, but there is like soulful remorse, but like he still is conflicted about it, which I still find is interesting and stuff. They usually just make them just cold to it at a certain point, especially in a revenge film. But I like that they paid attention to the psyche of this. So I'm surprised with that. I really enjoyed this one, and the cinematographer on it is a guy that I think he got his first kicks during the Furious 7 movie. He was the cinematographer on that, and they were making all like brand new rigs and stuff like that for action sequences and stuff, so that kind of added to this one. So there's some really cool shots in this movie.
Cool. I'm glad you liked it. I'm not the only person in the world who liked it. So
yeah, I give it 3.5, Phil.
I gave it three and a half, actually.
Yeah. Wow. You guys, look at you guys using Letterboxd at all.
Right. The right way.
Still not doing it right.
So Bill, what else have you seen other than The Accountant 2 and actually liked it?
Yeah. Still kind of scared about that. So this episode's out of the blue, even though I probably should have known I would like this because the original is really great. The Wedding Banquet is really awesome.
Oh, good.
What a shock. You write a good script, have likable characters, and don't do anything stupid. And oh my God, it's a good movie. Good acting. Bowen Yang, who I always find quite funny on SNL, even when he's like trying not to laugh in the background, which always makes me laugh. Kelly Marie Tran is awesome in this film, and Lily Gladstone is really good. But Joan Chen shows up and just kills again.
Yes,
like, she's just awesome. And Yoon Jun from Minari, the Oscar winner, she's incredible in this film. It's just really watchable. It's funny and it's got a really nice soul to it. And it's pretty cool watching a film that's actually really funny and queer. So I'm down with that. It's a big surprise. I think people should watch it. I think you'll really enjoy it. As I was saying earlier, I don't know if it was on the podcast, I saw the Pink Floyd Live at Pompeii in IMAX. It was awesome. I love Pink Floyd. It's so nice seeing David Gilmour and Roger Waters actually talk to each other.
Oh, yeah. And, it reminds you of the good times.
Yeah, and not want to kill each other.
Yeah.
I just wish Roger Waters would shut the fuck up because I kind of want to see them live because I've never seen them live.
He never will.
No,
anything will. Recently has told you that is never going to happen.
No. I agree.
Yeah.
I mean, I would at this point, I would pay money to see David Gilmour because he's just a genius.
I've seen them both separately. And
me too.
Not
Gilmour.
I saw Roger do The Wall and it was incredible, but I saw David Gilmour and he did all the good Pink Floyd songs that I love and it was incredible. So, but yeah, this, the Pompeii performance is just so damn good.
It is really
good. And I said this last episode, but that version of Echoes is just so fucking good. They were pretty much the most incredible band in the world for like a 10-year stretch there. And this kind of shows them at their prime and it's pretty amazing. And it was really loud and it looked incredible. So, you know, better than that YouTube video of it I watched a couple hundred times. It's great. I don't think it's playing anymore, so hopefully it'll be on 4K so I can buy it and watch it a bunch more times.
This feels like something, this is so random, but it just feels like something that should be like Pink Floyd Pompeii on Laserdisc.
Totally.
It might have been.
Probably was.
Yeah. I think Pulse was. Thought. Pretty sure Pulse was when it was released. Pulse
definitely was. Yeah. I have it on my wall. I didn't have a player, but I had the disc.
Before I watched it, Pink Floyd released a couple of videos from the remaster on YouTube, and Roger Waters is not in the videos. They've edited him out. He's not there.
Yeah,
he actually is not a member of Pink Floyd anymore. He does not exist.
Wow.
Which
animosity is real.
Yeah. If there's like a long shot, you see Roger Waters. And you don't see him ever again.
I can't wait for like 25 years from now from when somebody does like the story of Pink Floyd and how that all that shit went down because nobody's ever talked about it.
Nope.
Nobody knows what the beef is, just that there's serious beef.
Yeah. They did Live 8 and that's about it. Yeah. I saw The Shrouds, the new David Cronenberg film.
And
it's good.
Oh, yes.
If not a little unfocused at times, but it's still pretty damn cool. Yes. It's got some very cool ideas. And it's one of those Cronenberg films where you're like, hey, this is pretty normal. And then somebody walks in without an arm. And it's just like, yes, we're back.
Oh, I'm so glad to hear that because it looks interesting.
Yeah, it's a really strange film. Like Vincent Cassell's character, his wife dies. So he decides he's going to make this technology where he can watch his wife's body decompose via webcam on his phone.
That's so crazy.
Is that sexy?
And then somebody gets pissed off at him and hacks it and locks him out of his wife's webcam, and he gets really angry. It's a very strange film. It's David Cronenberg. It's lovely. Yeah. It's way better than the last one. And
the bar was really low. Let's be honest.
And to be fair, I think half my audience
it was lower for you guys.
I think at least half my audience walked out because it gets kind of strange. But
Cronenberg movie. What did they
exactly? I think they were thinking that Minecraft's upstairs. But it's good. I'm happy to report that it's good. As I said, just maybe a little unfocused, but it's definitely not The Brood. It's definitely not The Fly. It's definitely not a bunch of his other older films, but it's still pretty cool. And it's nice to see him actually come back and make something cool. And I love Vincent Cassell. He's so good in the film, and he kind of looks like David Cronenberg with that like push back gray hair. It's cool.
I hope you guys. Wow.
Yeah, I hope you guys get to see it. It's
the closest for me is Kamloops.
Oh,
yeah.
So I don't think I'm not feeling the drive out there.
Yeah,
to be honest. So are you saying it's more Map of the Stars?
I didn't like Map of the Stars.
Is it more Cosmopolis?
Didn't like Cosmopolis.
you're missing.
Is it more Dangerous Method?
Yes. No. Yeah, that was good. No, it's own animal. Okay. It's different. It's cool. I think you guys will like it.
I love just striking bells of things that you don't like for Cronenberg.
it's cool. I saw the Cheech and Chong documentary / whatever they want to call it. Cheech and Chong's last movie. It's really good. I really like Cheech and Chong. They were pretty cool comedians who pushed boundaries in the 70s and put out some pretty cool like albums that I really like. And if you haven't heard the albums, the movie, they do a lot of references from the albums. So
Mary Elephant.
If you don't know who Dave is, you might not want to see the Cheech and Chong movie.
Well, that's a given.
Yeah. But it's good and it's kind of sweet and poignant. Tommy Chong's still a bit of an asshole, but I kind of like Tommy Chong. I like that he's a bit of an asshole. And Cheech is pretty cool. It's fun. It's one of the better docs I've seen in a while, actually. I quite enjoyed it.
Did you see Glenn Howell's little shout out to Cheech Marin recently at an
Yes.
Show?
Yeah.
It was so sweet. He said like that Cheech made him feel welcome on the Spy Kids set and like invited him to eat lunch with him and Danny Trejo. And he felt like he was like the coolest kid in the world when he was coming onto a movie. It was the first movie he'd ever done and he was a kid and he felt like kind of like a little loser and like he didn't fit in anywhere, and then they invited him to sit at their table. Amazing. I thought it was like such a sweet thing for him to mention at an award show.
That's amazing.
And then he was like, let's smoke some weed that my dog just pooped out of.
Yeah, exactly. It's Great Dane, man. Fun fact, my mom let me watch Cheech and Chong movies from like way too young of an age, so I was well versed on every like not just Up and Smoke.
How did you turn out?
No comment. So like I knew not just Up and Smoke and Next Movie, but I knew Corsican Brothers, I knew Nice Dreams, I knew like Born in East LA. Like I knew all of the movies. And so yeah, this is a really special doc to me. I haven't checked it out yet, but I do have the link. And
I think you'll dig it. It's good.
Yeah.
Thanks, Mom.
Yeah, right. Thanks, April. You're a great mom.
And last night I was texting Marina, telling her that I wanted to find a movie that I could bring to the show that I was sure nobody was going to watch. So I watched Winter, Spring, Summer, and Fall, the new Jenna Ortega film. What? Yeah, it's a new Jenna Ortega film where she doesn't play a goth
Oh, good.
She plays a super smart young woman going to Harvard, and she wants to let loose. And yeah, she meets Percy Hines White from My Old Ass, who's a bit of a stoner and likes metal.
And her love interest from Wednesday season one.
Yeah, that too. Yeah, that too. And it's not very good, but I think Marina will like it. So I texted her saying she should watch it. And he is legitimately 6'5" and she is 5'3", and they try very hard to make it so they don't stand beside each other. And when they do, he is a foot and a half taller than her. It looks really weird. He's an NBA player compared to her. It looks really strange. It's not bad. It's just not my movie. But I thought for sure I would try to bring something to the show that might be good. But it's not my film. But if you're a Jenna Ortega fan, you're gonna love it.
Okay, wait. Is it safe for me to show my niece?
It has drug use. It has
kind of drug use?
They smoke joints.
Okay, that's okay.
Yeah,
injections are different.
Smoking
is okay.
They kiss. They kiss. They might like have like fake almost sex.
Okay, I better watch it first before I.
Yeah.
Fake almost sex.
They like start to kiss and then they sort of go towards the bed and then it cuts away.
Oh, it's probably fine.
Yeah,
she watches Stranger Things, so she's probably fine.
But yeah, Percy Hines White is really good. I think he's an up and comer, and everybody should watch My Old Ass because it rules.
I don't know what's going to happen with him because I think part of the reason he got dropped from Wednesday was there was a story that came out of Toronto because he's Canadian. He's from Toronto.
Yeah,
it was a story that came out of Toronto that he had been seducing young girls at parties like before he kind of hit big, but he was 20 and was like messing around with 15-year-old girls at parties or something.
Yeah, all right. I take everything back.
I don't know if it was ever fully substantiated or if this was just shit that went around on Twitter, but like shortly after all of that broke was when he got dumped from Wednesday. Mm-hmm. And then My Old Ass came out and then no one really talked about any of that anymore. So I don't know what happened with it.
Well, people online were, because the internet will always bring up the dig that shit up.
All right. Listen to nothing I've said in the last 5 minutes. I apologize. I have no idea. Well,
I didn't know either.
I don't know. Like, I don't know if this, I really don't know what the story is. Like, I know he and his family and all of that came out like completely denying all of this, but I mean, what else are we going to do? It's just weird. I don't know where any of that is at.
I watched Daredevil season 4 or whatever the hell it is.
Oh, Born Again. You finished it. You finished it.
It's freaking great. Sorry to change the subject. I was feeling embarrassed. It's really good. That ending is fucking killer.
Right?
Yeah.
And the most violent that any of these shows have been.
Yeah.
Well, I saw an interview with somebody, or maybe I read something online, and they were talking about the budget differences between Disney and Netflix. And somebody had asked, like, why is the Disney show so much more the action sequences are higher stakes? And they're like, because we have a bigger budget. Like, we had no money. We made a Netflix series. It was shoestring. Like, everything was done on a budget, so we could only do certain scenes, and we didn't have a lot of money for stunts. So it was, what could we put the actors through? Because we don't have money to do big action sequences.
Yeah, it's like
have all the money.
It's like, we were really pumped that you loved those hallway fight scenes, because we couldn't afford anything else.
Anything more, exactly. Exactly. Talk about elevating with what you have.
Yeah.
Plus, also a big shout out to the director of the last two episodes of the season, Benson and Moorhead.
Yeah.
Just some guys that were also
celebrating the anniversary of their film, The Endless, the other day online.
Masterpiece, if I might say.
Oh my God, what a twist. It just takes your brain out of your skull and just twists it up into a soft serve cone. It's so great.
Spring's pretty good too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You know.
Yep. Yeah.
Oh, whatevs. Just saying.
Whatevs.
Just saying.
Yeah, that's it for me.
Okay, well, I only watched two things other than whatever else we've talked about. So I did watch Captain America Brave New World.
Sorry.
Yeah, Do you remember it? Do you even remember it?
Not much. I shouldn't say that because I do like the chemistry between Anthony Mackie and Danny Ramirez. I think they're really, really good together. I just wish the movie was better. Mm-hmm. And can we just like marvel for a moment at the fact that Julius Ona's career has tanked so badly? Like, Loose was such a good movie. Like, what the fuck happened?
Loose was a good movie.
Loose was not a good movie. It is a fantastic movie.
Yeah.
He went to Hollywood and they've just given him crap.
Yeah. What else has he done besides Loose?
He did the Cloverfield Paradox movie.
Oh, right. Oh, yeah, wow. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. We don't want to get into that. We don't want to get Bill.
No.
Bill
I'm still waiting for Melissa. I'm still waiting for Melissa to go to Mexico and watching this on a plane because she's just going to hate this film.
It's so bad. It's not even worth it. Like it's just so bland. Like I don't even remember half of what happened.
Because they reshot three quarters of the film.
It's terrible.
Everything feels like a wasted opportunity after wasted opportunity after like there's just like nothing there. And then you even get to like the final, like the big thing, the stuff that they built the fucking trailers on that they shouldn't have. And it's even then it's just like, oh, come on.
Yeah, but earlier in the episode, Marina was like, oh, yeah, theatrical's dead. But this opened to like $112 million or something.
Yeah, but then sharply dropped off.
I know, but it's still got that cachet with people. Yeah, Marvel.
It's true. Yeah. But I'm hearing good reviews for Thunderbolts. So
I fucking hope so.
I like the cast a lot. So.
This is why I hope so, because I like the cast
like,
as well.
A lot. Yeah, it's underselling it if I don't say it three times.
Marvel is not well in my books, but they haven't been well in my books for a while. And then I'm going to bring a movie that I don't know if anybody has seen, which is very, very good. Like very, very, very good. The Assessment. Have you guys seen this?
Oh, this is on my list of things that I want to watch.
I almost watched it a couple of days ago, but so I didn't watch it.
Himesh Patel is in this one.
Yes. And Elizabeth Olsen.
Right.
Near future world where people can't have kids without being assessed first, and you can only be assessed if you meet certain criteria. Your assessor here is Alicia Vikander, who comes in for a seven-day assessment, and shit goes sideways like pretty much almost immediately. Dan and I fucking love this movie. Like, Dan's like, this was so
Dan
good.
Liked it. Yeah, Dan liked it.
Yeah, nice. That's a good one.
It's a movie that, like, it's just weird. Like, Vikander is basically like a six-year-old kid for all of it. It's just bizarre. And there is a dinner scene, which might be one of the best scenes of the year. Minnie Driver as this woman who is like 105 years old. There are reasons for this. But she is like preaching to the guests, and it's just the most glorious scenery chewing moment. It's fantastic.
I can't wait. I didn't know anything about it until yesterday.
Yeah,
so
no,
so I am really, really, really psyched. Yeah, that's awesome.
Female director, first time director. It's a German UK co-production that cost like $8 million to make, super cheap. Some really interesting ideas and some of the stuff that it gets into about families and parenting and decisions that we make. And Elizabeth Olsen is, let's not underestimate just how good she is.
I never will.
So good.
I never would.
I know.
Even she's in just, fucking Godzilla, she's good.
She's fantastic. So good here.
I do have one question. Is it a Black Mirror-like movie?
Kind of sounds like it.
Yeah, it kind of does.
It would be for the first two-thirds.
Okay. Oh, nice.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, no, say no more.
Yeah, and then stuff happens, and yeah, it's a little bit different.
Nice.
But I really, really enjoyed it. I thought it was a big surprise, and we both really liked it. I have watched nothing else because I've spent 62 hours over the last 2 weeks watching The Handmaid's Tale.
Well, I was wondering why you were wearing that red cloak, but
yeah,
the hat.
Spoiler. Yeah. Oh, I don't know. I haven't seen the show yet. So.
So Dan and I had watched season one, most of season one, when the show started airing in 2007, I think it was eight. I don't know. We never, for whatever reason, didn't watch any more of it. And for whatever reason, I was on Prime the other day and I'm like, oh, they have all The Handmaid's Tale. Oh, maybe it's time to start. So I started rewatching it with Dan. He lost interest very, very early on. And Marina continued on. It's not healthy. I'll say that. there were some days that were very, very depressing. Season two might be my favorite. The whole DC thing is just on another level. It's just shocking. The entire show is shocking. And I don't know what I like best. The first half, which is Gilead, crazy dystopia, too close for comfort because there's so much of what's going on in the world now that is seen on screen. And this was like 10 years ago. It's really scary. Or the second half, which is more like political intrigue. They're both really good. They work really well together. And I cannot wait to see how the show ends.
Nice.
But highly recommended. Very, very good. And now I'm thinking, I guess maybe I need to read the sequel. I don't know. Do I go to Margaret Atwood again? We have problems.
It seems there's trauma there. So I don't know if that's...
There is legit trauma here beyond The Handmaid's Tale.
Exactly. I always say... Unless it's constructive ways to attack your trauma, why do it? Why do it?
So that's all I've seen. Melissa?
Okay. I've seen Melissa's Letterboxd list, and I'm goddamn curious about one film.
I've been bracing myself all episode for Bill's disappointment because I watched Wicked and I didn't hate it.
Oh!
What?
Dude, me and Melissa might be in the same boat for this one.
I didn't hate it. I feel like, listen, if you're not a musical person, this isn't going to win you over. But if you're okay with musicals, or if you liked the play or the book, you're probably going to dig the movie.
The book. I still didn't care for the movie.
I think it was too long. It needed editing for sure. But I really appreciated the camp of it. I liked the look of it. I liked the diversity of the dancers. I liked the chemistry between the cast. Like, there was actually more in here to like than I expected to like. I had very, very low expectations. I kind of put it on thinking, if I really hate it, I'll turn it off in 15 minutes. And then I watched the whole thing, and it was and I'll watch part two.
Did you enjoy
right now? I'm gonna watch part two.
There's like the big song at the end, Defying Gravity, where they like do like 17 cuts during the song, so it cuts it up.
I was holding face for Defying Gravity, Bill.
Okay, somebody's gonna have to explain to me the term holding space because I don't get it.
It was
too old. I don't get it.
Oh, okay. Oh,
like you people tell my nieces say this all the time. No idea what they're referring to. I'm like, I guess I'm just too old. Next time we see each other, you're gonna have to explain holding space. Okay.
I'm so glad that I had somebody in my camp.
The old Bill would jump in and start yelling at you, but he said
the new Bill is more mature.
He's had a couple of beer and he's feeling pretty good. So. No,
was that what you were referring to?
It was another movie.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, so I still may be bracing for Bill's disappointment. Okay. And then I did see Bob Trevino Likes It, which I, for the most part, really loved. Like, I loved three quarters of this film. And then I was so angry about the ending. Like it really upset me. I was fully on board with this movie. I thought Barbie Ferreira was fucking fantastic because I really do think that's a hard role. Like it's hard to play someone who's so emotionally needy and still have everyone actually care about and root for her, you know? And I think she pulled that off so brilliantly. And Leguizamo is just, he's so great in this movie. He's like, you want him to be your adopted dad at the end of this movie, you know? Mm-hmm. But what really pissed me off was how she was treated when he went into the hospital. Like, I was just like, you saw that she left him like 30 messages. You heard that she tried to break into your house to check on him. And you never thought to call her, but you made a fucking scrapbook. Like, you made a fucking scrapbook, but you didn't call her to tell her that he was in the hospital. Like, what the? I was so angry at that ending. And like, I think the film was based on the director's, like, this all actually mm-hmm. kind of happened to her. I hope that that didn't fucking happen to her in real life. Like, I fear that it did, because that's why it made it into the script. But I was so upset with that ending, because I loved the film up until that point. I don't know if you guys had similar reactions or it was just me alone in my anger, but
for me, you were alone in your anger.
I was angry because Leguizamo died. That is what made me sad. I was like,
there was a lot of love from the other two, and I kind of liked it.
I loved this movie. I hated that plot point. I just hated that plot point so much. It just really made me sad, because the rest of it I thought was just so beautiful. Okay, I also watched, and I watched this so that no one else has to, because please tell, like, I am not recommending this movie at all. It's not even so bad it's good, it's just bad. Prey.
Which one?
So this is the Emile Hirsch.
Okay. Okay.
So not the Predator movie.
Emile not the Predator Hirsch. One. So I was like bracing.
That movie ruled.
Brilliant. Go watch it immediately. The Emile Hirsch movie with the lion attacking people. Don't see it. Please don't see it. Yeah. Just laughably terrible. Like,
happened to Emile Hirsh?
Too much and not enough.
Female producer in a meeting and his career.
But hot damn, is that Christopher McCandless movie fucking incredible?
Oh yeah, Into the Wild's fantastic, and Alpha Dog's really great too.
Okay, wait, I missed this story. He actually did this.
Yes.
Wow. Okay.
He choked a female producer executive up against a wall in some kind of production meeting, and since then he's had essentially no career.
Oh, was it on a movie that was good too? I think it was on Freaks. Jesus. He was working on Freaks.
Yeah. Why can't people just be cool, man? I'm so tired of this shit.
I kind of wish that Bruce Dern kicked his ass after that.
Maybe he did, and we just don't know.
Yeah, you want all the Brasco on him.
But yeah, Prey is awful. Just horribly, horribly, horribly awful. Ryan Felipe is in it too. Speaking of people
on a scale of Gladiator 2, where would you put Prey?
Well, Prey's terrible, but no one's going to see it because it's buried on a fucking streamer. So to me, Gladiator 2 is the way worse sin.
Nice.
Because Prey is on Amazon Prime, right?
Yeah,
I did scroll by it. Okay.
Yeah, it's bad. It's
fine. And just for the record, fuck Speed Racer.
I love Speed Racer.
Yeah, fuck you. What the hell? Yeah,
Speed Racer is the shit. There was going to be anger. Yeah. That was like dropping a grenade. Like, what did you do that for, man?
Speed Racer is starting to get its dues now.
No, it's fuck that
it
film.
It is. Ten years ago, we were talking about how good this movie is. It's fucking so great. Good.
I love that movie.
You and me, Melissa, high fives.
It's campy. It's beautiful.
Agreed.
I saw it in IMAX when it came out.
Oh, and that it was the right thing to do.
Yeah. Okay. And then I saw a couple of movies. I saw a couple of movies with the kiddos because I was hanging out with my.
Yeah, this is one of them.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I saw Shooting Stars, which is the LeBron James kind of biopic about his early career and coming up with his friends in high school and then college basketball. or high school basketball. It's a high school basketball. It was actually quite charming. The cast was really good, and it's a really interesting story. I'm not a sports nerd, so I didn't really know a whole lot about how LeBron James became LeBron James, but it was pretty cool. My nephews really dug it because they're huge LeBron fans. So that one was fun. And then I watched, I took them to see a Minecraft movie because they're both obsessed with Minecraft. Oh, is that, so was it just that you were confused that I would go see Minecraft movie?
I kind of was. I was just like, okay. Melissa just go see Minecraft like out of the blue, like for some, like no reason, like.
No.
I'm pretty sure the Shrouds is playing in Vancouver.
No, it was totally the nephews. Like, I have an 11-year-old nephew and a 9-year-old nephew, and they really badly wanted to see the Minecraft movie.
This makes more sense.
Because all their friends have been singing the chicken.
Steve's Lava Chicken.
Steve's Lava Chicken song at school during recess and stuff. So it's like already it's making the rounds. And when it came on screen, my one nephew was like singing along with it. And I was like, how the fuck do you know this song? But yeah, so it was not good. The Minecraft world building was pretty fun. Like the animation part of it was pretty fun, I thought. The story that they cooked up for it was really convoluted and overlong and really felt unnecessary. And we just wanted to be in the Minecraft world more. My nephew said that it did not follow the game enough for them.
Okay. Wait, but the game doesn't have a plot. It's
just, well, I don't know. There were things that they said that just didn't work like it does in the game. So I don't know. I've never played Minecraft in my life, so I can't tell you what those things were.
Okay, so yeah. Steve liked it. You were indifferent. So Marina, break the tie.
Yeah, when I see it eventually, sure.
Yeah.
The Lava Chicken song is pretty fucking great. And Dennis the dog. Dennis the Wolf.
Dennis the Wolf
is also the best part of the movie.
I don't know. My niece told me I needed to watch the Dogman movie because it's awesome. So I will put my money there. Thank you.
That one was entertaining too. Couple kids movies won me over this year.
Steve, you're going soft.
So the thing that I thought was interesting about the Minecraft movie is I feel like a lot of the jokes and setups are there for people our age.
Yeah.
They're not there for kids.
Jennifer Coolidge is 100% there for us because she's hysterical. When she said that she's a trash can with raccoons in it, I fucking died. Like, I was dying. Jason Momoa makes me laugh so much in that movie. Just, I love how much he doubles down on how cool he is. And it just really makes me laugh. And at the center, besides masterminds, I'm a Jared Hess apologist. I love a lot of his work. So I felt like
the perfect guy to make this.
I didn't really like, I was like, oh, it's kind of weird. And then the movie started. I'm like, no, actually he's fucking perfect. Like the town, like everything about it is so Napoleon Dynamite coded and it's just kind of dorky. And I love it. And there's a tot gun in it. Tater tot gun, which is so Napoleon Dynamite too. So
yeah. That was all right. I found it kind of bizarre because the stuff that was resonating with my nephew, I was just like, does this movie know who its audience is supposed to be? Cause I'm not sure. Like I just found it weird. I thought like, there's a lot of stuff in here that's really coded to adults who remember the 80s.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Then, yeah, exactly. Well, cause his complete aesthetic is 1989. Like even that, the year of that car, I believe, is in 1989 as well. And it's just like, it's really funny.
Yeah. I thought that was weird because that stuff was like completely over the heads.
Yeah. It's one of my surprise movies this year. When we get to the end of the year, probably Minecraft will be in there. It's one of my surprise movies.
At number 7.
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, I didn't hate it. I just, I probably would not have gone if the nephews hadn't really wanted to go.
But you're an awesome aunt, so you took them to see the
movie. Yeah, that's awesome.
There we go. Yeah, that's the thing to do for sure.
So I have one more question about your watch pile. Did you continue the Taylor Sheridan-ness? Did you watch Landman?
I watched all of them. I watched.
Oh my god, oh, you no, did!
I didn't watch that one. I only watched.
You didn't watch Landman, and I bet you didn't watch Bass Reeves.
No.
No.
I only watched the Yellowstone ones, and mostly it was because I was. It's like it was like an anthropological experiment. I wanted to understand American Republicans, and so
I wanted to understand them any better.
I think now you have to watch a lot of Bosch or something.
You know, I think you got to watch Landman. I heard it's like a continuation of the shit.
Yeah, so. I mean, it seems to have the same like weird gender politics. Like, yeah.
you have Billy Bob Thornton talking shit about windmills in the very first episode. I think it's in the first 15 minutes. So
I'll catch up with Lioness season 2, and then I think I might actually cancel.
Yeah. I finished Lioness season 2 and I liked it a lot more than season 1.
And I liked season 1, so I'm in for a treat then.
There was too much of Joe's family in season 1 for me. They got away from that and it's more tactical, and I enjoyed season 2 a lot more.
I don't know. Paramount's got to have a documentary about Journey or some 80s, but they have like a band one every week, right? Like,
well, because it's MTV, right?
Yeah.
Did you watch the Carters documentary?
No.
Aaron Carter and Nick Carter.
No, but maybe I should.
Yeah, there you go. Like, how have you not watched a documentary about the Carters?
I don't know.
spot.
Honestly,
it's not in sync, man. Come back to me later. It's not just the Timberlake documentary, so, you know.
Is that everything for you, Melissa?
Well, no, the last couple of weeks, I feel like have just been like the Will Poulter supremacy for me. Because, Black Mirror, and then Dogs with Horses, and then Warfare. So I'm like.
That's sparing Death of a Unicorn as well.
Right.
I have to ask, what do you think of Will Poulter's shaved head in Warfare?
I mean, he's hot either way now.
I agree 100%. It's like, it's a little unsettling.
No, but like,
I mean, I prefer the hair. He does have
pretty incredible hair.
Well, he has great hair. Yeah.
I'm just really glad that Cosmo Jarvis wasn't like acting weird in that movie, because his acting is so weird in Alto Nights that it's indescribable. what he's doing in this movie, I don't even know.
Steve Stebbing, the only person who saw Alto Nights.
Yeah. You're like, what was that movie? That was when a guy played two roles and did it badly. Fast forward back to the beginning of this episode to hear when a guy did it correctly.
Correct.
Yeah, that's about it. And then I'm introducing Craig to crap, the Fincher series about
Mindhunter.
Mindhunter, thank you.
Jesus. There we go.
Good shit.
So
that is good shit.
Speaking of Fincher, I'm gonna brag about this one. I got the 7.4K at a pawn shop for $15, and I sent Marina a picture, and she's like,
I had a moment. Yeah, okay, great. You also now need to share what else you found at the pawn shop. This was at work.
Oh yeah, I found a neon screener box set at work a couple of today in a box.
What?
With a couple other screeners for a screener for Joker and a screener for Jojo Rabbit.
What the fuck? But
yeah, it's the 2019 box. It's got Portrait of a Lady on Fire in it and The Beach Bum.
God damn.
So I'm like, yes, I finally have a neon box.
Yeah, I don't have one. I thought I would get one this year, but I didn't. Or last year, but I didn't. Maybe this year.
Maria's going to pan her camera over and show her collection.
They're in the other room. Yes. Mind you, they've been less. I mean, I don't want to sound ungrateful, but they have been less interesting the last couple of years, mostly because I've actually seen the movies by the time the box arrives. The first couple of years, it was like, holy shit, we haven't even like this. We've only heard about this movie playing somewhere. Nobody has seen it yet. Mm-hmm. So
I'd be like, I'm coming on a ferry right now. and I need to borrow that box for like 2 hours.
So I want to pimp an event that I'm hosting May 7th. It's a Wednesday. It's either the 7th or the 8th. I don't even remember. Guys, I'm hosting a Q&A with Tim Miller and Robert Valley for Volume 4 of Love, Death, and Robots.
Nice.
Very excited. Very excited. My meeting with Netflix went like this. Do you have a moderator for this yet? No, we don't. I would love to do it. Great, Marina. We'd love you to do it. I'm like, so is David Fincher coming? Because every time I have the conversation with them about LDR, I'm like, so can we get Fincher? It will happen eventually because they know I want him, but it's not happening this time.
So. Nice.
I'll take Tim, I guess.
While we're pimping things,
yes.
I feel like because you'll probably get this up like tomorrow or the next day or something. It is really worth pointing out if you are anywhere in the vicinity of Vancouver that one of the greatest documentaries of the past year is now playing at VIFF, the Secret Mall Apartment.
Nice.
Oh, hell yeah.
Nice. And if you live in Victoria, it's playing here too at the Vic.
Yes.
Yeah, it's awesome.
I think it's playing in Kelowna.
It got distribution. And guess who's the producer on it? Jesse Eisenberg.
Hey! Oh, nice.
So, like, not only did the man give us a real pain, but he also got distribution for Secret Mall Apartment. And that
the man cares.
I'm really happy. I wanted to shout out that movie. And I also wanted to shout out, there's a really terrific documentary that is available on YouTube. So it's free and available to watch at any time, called Smokey D Underground Reporter. And it's a documentary about local graffiti artist, Smokey Devil. And the reason I'm bringing this up is because this past week we actually lost a really incredible activist in the Downtown East Side named Trey Helton. And Trey, a.k.a. Ashtray, was a compatriot of Smokey D's and a graffiti artist in the neighborhood. Was manager of Ops, which was a safe injection site, lowest barrier safe injection site in Vancouver, and trained hundreds of people, including myself, on how to administer naloxone and saved so many lives. The continued impact of him being on this planet will reverberate on and on. So just in his honor, I would really recommend that folks check out the Smokey D documentary that's for free on YouTube.
Awesome.
Hell yeah.
Adding that to the list. And since we're talking about free documentaries on YouTube, Dremio has a 2-hour documentary about Phil Collins called Phil Collins Drummer First. It's spectacular.
I watch a lot of Dremio.
That documentary like is so good. Cause I mean, I don't think we've seen Phil Collins since he was last on tour a couple of years ago and they had to cancel the tour because he's so sick. And I think the interviews here are all fairly recent. It's really good.
I love watching really great drummers trying to play Slipknot songs.
They're like, we can't do this. It's too fast.
Yeah. It's like, hey, Mike Portnoy, let's try. I know you've never heard this Slipknot song. Can you try to like figure it out? And he can't because it's nuts because they have two drummers. Yeah.
So just wanted to plug that because I did watch it a while back and it's really good. Okay. What's coming soon?
I must admit I wrote my notes about 3 minutes before the show while I was talking to Marina. So this is very sparse.
When you said you were doing show notes, I didn't realize those were the show notes you were talking about.
Yeah. As I said, I completely forgot we were recording this podcast until about 15 minutes before we recorded. And I had already drank like 4 beer.
I can fill in the gaps for you if you need to.
All right, cool. May 2nd, Prime Video has the Anna Kendrick, I don't even remember A Simple Favor. Like I don't remember it being very good, but this is another Simple Favor. Was it good?
It was okay.
Are we allowed to say Blake Lively's name anymore? Like,
yes, we are. We're not gonna get canceled yet.
I don't know about how that finished because I'm not in the know.
It's ongoing. But, it'll okay, never
yeah,
end.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I like Anna Kendrick. Sure. Mm-hmm.
And Henry Golding's in it too, I believe.
And
eye candy. Love it.
Yeah. And I pay for Prime, so I might as well watch it.
Yeah, exactly. Again. May 1st.
Thunderbolts.
Yeah, I'm seeing that.
Nobody's excited about that.
I am.
Melissa, are you going to see Thunderbolts?
On a plane somewhere, someday.
Okay, so maybe not Thunderbolts. Bonjour, Tristesse sucks. Steve liked it ish but that movie sucks. A movie I missed at VIFF because it got late added, Pavements. I love Pavement. They're one of my favorite bands from the 90s, and they made a documentary.
What?
And it was added at VIFF on the last day, and I missed it because I was watching Night Bitch, and then I saw Hans Zimmer. But yeah, it looks incredible. I love Pavement.
Yeah, me too.
I think Stephen Malkmus is a goddamn poet. And
I was obsessed with the song "Cut Your Hair," which is like I think their only radio single.
Yeah,
and
Stephen Malkmus rhymed the word "steria" with "malaria," so that's pretty good.
yeah. Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, here we come.
Yeah, I love Pavement. Actually, I played Pavement at work one day, and they told me to turn it off because they were out of tune. And I'm like, that's just Pavement.
This is like saying Sonic Youth is out of tune.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're one of the greats. So I can't believe this is actually done and coming out. The movie Rust, the movie where Alec Baldwin shot, what's her name? Helena Hutchins. With a quote-unquote prop gun, and she died. They finished the film. I had no idea. And it's coming out in a week.
Who's putting this out?
I don't know, but I will never watch this film.
No.
Yeah, who had the fucking smart thought of doing that?
And honestly, if you do watch this film, I think less of you, because that's just gross. It feels really weird, and I would never watch that film. I feel kind of gross actually talking about it. So, you know, he was found not guilty, I think, or something like that. And then he was on SNL 2 days later, and it felt super weird. So, yeah, I won't be watching that. And Nick Cage has a new movie called The Surfer, which
I hope we get it.
I think looks pretty cool. Is he going to surf? Time will tell.
I think so. I think the title alludes to him. So
I would hope so. May 9th has one of the great titles of the year.
Yes.
Clown in a Cornfield.
I have a screener.
Do you?
I think this actually looks like it might be screener. Cool.
It's from the directors of Tucker and Dale versus Evil.
Oh, I know.
I'm sold.
Yeah. So that's what I want the movie to be next time. Honestly, is that or another stupid movie that comes out this week?
A friend of mine saw it at South By and said it was really good. So I'm looking forward to it.
Okay, cool.
And I like a good horror film. So I watched this trailer because it seemed kind of unbelievable. But this Fight or Flight. With Josh Hartnett.
I have a screener for this too. I'm down for this one too.
He has like dyed blonde hair, mm-hmm. and he fights a plane full of assassins.
This is Bullet Train in a plane.
Sorry. I'm looking this up as we speak because I'm like, what the fuck?
I just saw the trailer for this in front of Warfare today.
It's gonna be fun.
Super fun.
Yeah. I'm down for Clown in a Cornfield or this film. To be
like honestly,
it's Josh Hartnett fighting assassins in a plane, and at some point the stewardess tosses him a chainsaw.
Yes,
why is there a chainsaw on the plane?
No, don't know, but I don't care.
Like honestly, like when I was writing this down, I wanted to write hashtag win beside it. Like this looks incredible.
I will say the still of on the trailer is him looking like crazed.
Yeah,
and I think I'm sold.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's him exploring that amazing charisma that he had in Trap in what looks like to be a better movie. So
And Katie Sackhoff is in it.
Katie Sackhoff's in it. That's the other one. Yes, I forgot.
Yeah. So,
who directed this thing?
I don't know, but it looks genius.
I don't even care at this point.
And then the film I think Steve was alluding to, Friendship, which is my pick.
I think that one's been moved, though.
I think it's coming out.
I think it was moved to the 16th.
Was it?
Yeah.
That sucks. Well, maybe it's limited, but I think You Should Leave is genius.
Yes,
like,
it is.
Yeah, it's like the cringiest cringe of the cringe, and I kind of like the cringe. So this movie looks very cringy, and Tim Robinson's a genius, and Paul Rudd, still 16.
Rocking like a mustache.
Just like Steve Stebbing.
Nice callback.
Yeah. If I could, that'd be my film if it opens. Yeah.
I don't think I'll be getting that one.
If not, Frosted Tip, Josh Hartnett is my film.
I think we got to go with that, guys.
Yeah.
I think it has to be Fight or Flight.
Beauty. Okay. I'm definitely going to be bringing Clown in a Cornfield as well, though. Because I have the screener for that one. Also, a couple that Bill didn't mention that are on the 9th. Joe Carnahan's Shadow Force.
Oh, my gosh.
With Kerry Washington and Omar Sy.
I like Omar Sy.
I like Omar Sy, too. But
I'm just not sure if I like Joe Carnahan, though. I don't
Who know. Does? Who does? Oh,
he made one good movie.
Yep.
Smoke and Aces?
No.
I still like the... Oh, Narc. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I like Smoke and Aces. I like Narc and I'm really like A-Team because Patrick Wilson's great.
I didn't quite hear you there, Steve.
I may like the A-Team and the great. one that played Viv that's now getting its release through Elevation on May 9th is Sharp Corner. Yes, the release. All of the screenings conflicted with something that I wanted to see more, and I didn't get to see it. But it's got Ben Foster and Kobe Smulders in it.
Yeah, so. I saw it. Viv.
Yeah, and
it's good.
Okay, cool. Yeah,
it's not great, but it's good.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah. But yeah, that is it.
Wow. For some reason, I thought there was something bigger coming.
No,
Thunderbolt.
Bigger than Josh Hartnett with a chainsaw on a plane. Come on.
Yeah. But I mean, the weeks after we have Hurry Up Tomorrow.
Okay, that's fine.
Possibly Friendship, and then Mission Impossible: The Final Reckoning. So
that's going to be a good end of the month. All right. Yeah. So, where can folks find you?
In this alley.
You can now find Steve.
Behind the wheel of a car.
Yeah. You can find me anywhere I can drive to.
Steve will be recording next month from Ontario because he drove there.
Yeah. Steve's going to be recording from in front of your house.
Yeah.
not creepy.
Not creepy at all.
Yeah.
I am Bill Harris. I am on Blue Sky at That Bill Harris, and I'm on Letterboxd at SoundJam69. Have a good couple weeks.
And you can find me on Blue Sky and Letterboxd at The Marina.
And you can find me on Letterboxd as at Melzy.
If there's a social media, type in the Steeble Dead. You'll probably find me or Steve Stebbing. You can also find my website, stevestebbing.ca. I do a show on there and on YouTube called What the Hell Should I Watch with my daughter, Chloe. And that's released every Friday at 9 a.m. Pacific time. I am also on Tremble, the horror podcast with Kurt and Taylor. Our last two episodes are on Tales from the Crypt, the 1972 one with Peter Cushing, and Tales from the Crypt Demon Night, a film that has a badass soundtrack to it, and Billy Zane at possibly his sexiest. I mean, come on. It's even his own favorite performance of his career. But
what a career it's been.
Right. I also want to make a quick message that I did an episode of Tremble recently on Friday the 13th, The New Blood, which is like my favorite Friday the 13th film. And then like 5 days after we released the episode, Laura Park Lincoln passed away from cancer at 62, who played Tina, who is my favorite final girl in the Friday series. So, you know, rest in peace. Finally, I'm on Shane Hewitt in the Night Shift. It's aired out of Toronto on News Talk 1010 on the iHeartRadio network. It goes live at 8 p.m. Eastern time, but you can also check out the podcast, whatever podcasts are available.
Between now and then, you can find all notes, links to all the things we talked about today at atcpod.ca. And until the next time,
hack the planet. Bye.